B3. Number 7B.
All right. So we will try to see how we can build such a matrix. I have said that there are around about 260 references, and there, again, we have to be very careful and in the analysis of these references. We must always be clear that we are not investigating the term evil. The term evil appears 260 times. We are investigating now something more specific, namely, how do we handle evil? Therefore, it's a subject which narrows down the references of evil just to those references that have to do with how to handle evil. Which means that in doing that work, in going through all the references, you can't just think that every statement where evil appears in the text is a conclusive reference. You will find many statements that have on evil that has nothing to do with handling evil. There are many statements that have to do and say what evil is, what is the origin of evil, what are all the tricks of evil. So they are not giving us any clue in regard to handling evil. So we have in that study to eliminate those references which are not really dealing with the very question under consideration. So say if you have a statement in your reference list on evil which says that it is a belief that mind is both good and evil, you see, then this reference is of no value for our work, because it doesn't say anything how to handle evil. It just says that mind is not both good and evil, or things like that, or that evil is just the absence of truth. So it doesn't say how to handle it. Or if she says that evil is contradictory, well, it doesn't say how to handle evil. So you can see, after one has done the technical part of ordering the references, then you see at once that then already comes in the great sense of having spiritual sense and scientific sense, and using already the best scientific attitude, spiritually scientific attitude, to do that job. So it isn't just doing something blindly and something one can do if one can read. It needs already there a very good judgment of the subject, and see that not every reference gives us any clue. They can be references, as I quoted, that are not relevant to the subject. So when you eliminate those statements and then consider the rest of them, those that have really something to do with handling evil, then you just consider those statements. Sometimes there are not many statements left in a chapter. And this is quite helpful, then you are not swamped, I think you say swamped under a lot of references, you see, and then perhaps we can see the answer clearer. Now, naturally, we can't now take science and health and read all those references. This would be a job of a whole week, and I think we must choose a method that is easier, but naturally it is a method where you have to rely, so to say, first on my findings. But as an exercise, I think it is helpful. Therefore, what I'm going to do, you have in front of you a matrix. I left those boxes open. I could have printed my findings into it just as easily and given you the results, but I like that you work once with a empty matrix, just as if you would be at home. Say somebody may go back and feel, I really want to like to know what is really that term mortal mind. And you could make an investigation of mortal mind in a matrix wise. So in order to do that, you would have had perhaps some guidings how to go about the whole thing. So that is the purpose of this morning, that I like to help you in the method of how to do such a matrix. Because it isn't as simple as it looks like. That is one thing that is sure. It isn't as simple as it looks like. All right. So instead that we read from the textbook all those references, I present to you already my findings. But we will see how one can epitomize these findings. So I will tell you first, always in a chapter, shortly, how Mrs. Eddy deals with the question of evil in many words. In many words, just to give you my findings of the chapter first, in many words. Don't write that down, just listen to it. Then, as a second point, I try to give the text, the shortened text from the textbook, to substantiate what I have been saying, so that we can judge if it is in the textbook actually. And then third, we will write into the matrix a short epitome. That clear? So in this way I think we can save time so we can get on. All right. So we start out with prayer. And now I just talk around a little bit about prayer in regard to handling evil. It looks here as if in prayer, where she really has a sense of praying, and therefore is a sense of approaching the whole subject from our point of view, that there in prayer we really find that we should first of all, or as a first step in handling evil, have really the inward desire that we are freed from evil, that we are delivered from evil, that there must be first within ourselves something that really says, I would like to be delivered from evil. You see, that this would be, so to say, the first step, which says, I don't like evil, I'm not quite happy with evil, and I mean it really earnestly, that I would like to be freed from evil. What does she say in the text? I come now to the text, and you just listen. They are more or less the same words as in the text. Here in chapter you have that sense, deliver us from evil, from the evil one, that we should seek the destruction of all evil works, that there is a necessity to overcome the world, the flesh, and evil. That the Lord's Prayer says, but deliver us from evil. Can you hear in these statements a common denominator? Can you hear in that common denominator always the desire, the request, the longing to be freed from evil? Isn't that? Naturally, you can see, you will see at the beginning, when you begin such a matrix, the beginning will be always difficult because you have nothing to compare. If you try to catch the tone, it's more difficult than later on because you have nothing to compare those tones. If you have a melody that is beautiful, you say, why is it beautiful? Only because you compare it with another melody. If you would have only one melody, you would not be able to compare it, and therefore not really to evaluate it. All right, so shall we put down here in the box, here in prayer, where we have seen that perhaps in a short way the desire to be delivered from evil. The desire to be delivered from evil. I always wait until I see everybody has written it down, or else they can't follow me afterwards. Huh? So let's have some discipline that when we write down the epitome, that we do it as quickly as possible. Yeah. All right. In a way, I think this is quite satisfying to see that the whole question of handling evil starts right there where it should start, namely with the desire to be freed from evil. If we don't have that desire, it's no use to go any further, really. So isn't it beautiful that somehow divine principle was dictating a textbook that would really take us there where a searcher is, where an investigator is, and take him right there where he is, and doesn't just overflood him with a big, high metaphysical proposition. Takes him where he is. That's the humanity of the divine principle. All right, I go to the second chapter, Atonement and Eucharist. There again, I talk around the subject. When one reads those statements, one can see that Atonement and Eucharist is showing that Atonement needs a Eucharist, that in order to be delivered really from evil, you need the Eucharist, namely to be willing to cast out evil out of yourself. Therefore, we always have in that second step some kind of a Christ tone in it, which says you have to do something about it. You can't just be at the point of prayer where you just say, actually, I would like to be delivered from evil, but I'm not going to do anything about it. Here in Atonement and Eucharist, naturally it gives the sense, in order to handle evil, you have to do something about it. What are you going to do about it? Well, the best thing is, if you cast out evil out of yourself, so then you show forth some actions of your sincerity, that you actually want to be at one, atoned, reconciled with good. If you don't want to be reconciled with evil, so cast it out. So, what are the references here? And I just quickly read you the reference here from the text. It speaks here about thou shalt not know evil. Jesus' command was to turn from evil. The revealed word is seen casting out evil. Speaking about the disciples of Jesus, they knew what cast out evil. He says that it was spirituality which enabled Jesus to cast out evil. He says that goodness makes a lifelong sacrifice for the destruction of evil. Could you get the tone, or shall I read it again? I think it was rather clear here, even textually clear. Was all about casting out evil. Shall I read them again? Or? See, Jesus' command was to cast out evil. So, what shall we put down here? In the second box, in Atonement and Eucharist, you see, you go downward, huh? Not horizontally, downward to the second chapter. Let's put just command to cast out evil. Yes. All right. In a way, we already feel that the second chapter deals with evil in quite a different way than the first chapter. Wouldn't you feel that, comparing those two epitomes? Which already gives us a sense, oh, well, apparently Mrs. Eddy would deal with the question of evil completely different in every chapter. In regard to method, when you go on doing these epitomes, always try, when you come to a further chapter, to the next chapter, in order that your spiritual ear is somehow attuned, always think over what we had in the preceding chapters, what the findings were there, see. So here, before we go to the third chapter, just see, what does she say? Oh yes, first you must have the desire to be delivered from evil. And in order to show that you mean it, that you are sincere about it, the second chapter says, therefore, we feel within ourselves the command to cast out evil. And I have this tonality. And as we go to the third chapter, marriage, we find again a different sense, which says, but how can I cast out evil? I have the command to cast out evil, but how on earth am I going to cast out evil? Is that a human way of doing it? Is it using the human will to do it? How can I cast out evil? Is it how do I do it, you know? There is no indication how we should do it. So we feel, well, I think I cast out evil if instead of doing evil I do good. If I feel instead of using evil I use good. So that I give to good the ascendancy, the priority, the superiority, primal treatment to good. Instead of using good, I give, so to say, instead of using evil, I give to good my first place, my first love. I see that I should devote myself to the good, and if I do good, I can't do evil. What does the chapter on marriage say about it? There are only a few references there, actually, where she says, the good must have ascendancy over evil. Where she said, the human mind will demand a higher affection against the powers of evil. Can you hear the tone? See, the tone is that if I want to be delivered from evil, and therefore in order to be able to cast out evil, I must just give ascendancy to good. Ascendancy to good casts out evil. There is no such a thing or entity which says, here is evil and I somehow cast it out. Evil is just the absence of good. So by filling my consciousness with good, by giving my love and my heart and my desire, my soul and my mind to the good, I cast out evil. Can you see again what we saw yesterday, that good and evil are not two? Good and evil are not two. She doesn't say they are one, really, you see. They are not two. There is just one, good, and evil is the belief that there is something besides good. Therefore, the moment I have good, I have no evil. All right. So, the third epitome here in marriage, we could write down, the good must have ascendancy over evil. The good must have ascendancy over evil. Then we come to the next chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism. And that is an interesting chapter in regard to all the references on evil, because most references there on evil have not in the first place, those references have in the first place not to do with actually handling evil. Most of them define evil as nothing. So that is not, so to say, a way of handling evil, but it's prerequisites, I would say, here for understanding that fourth chapter. Here she says all that evil has no reality, that it is neither person, place, nor thing, that it's just an illusion, but a suppositional opposite of good, that evil is never present, that evil is neither scientific nor communicable. See, it's all about what evil in its own nature is, that it is not. And only a few references indicate, really, that therefore an understanding of God, good, keeps evil in check. There you have the handling of it. But only if we see God, good, spirit as all, and therefore evil as nothing. Evil is no place, things, nor person, nor evil is an illusion, and so on. We begin to see that this is the scientific method of handling evil, through understanding. We didn't have that before. See, before in the first three, you had a sense, what you always get in the first three chapters of the textbook, still a human sense in it. The scientific explanation of the first three chapters only come in the fourth chapter. The fourth chapter always gives us the scientific interpretation of what has been said in the first three. See, the first three have much more a human ethical sense. You should have the desire to be freed from evil in prayer. Then, in the second chapter, the command to cast out error. Again, it's a command. It's nearly a moral command. In the third chapter, again, it is said, well, the good in you should have ascendancy over evil. And only in the fourth chapter she begins to reason this thing out. She hasn't said up to this point that evil is nothing, that evil is an illusion. She hasn't said a thing about that. Isn't it interesting? Only when she comes to the 71 actually, she begins to tell for the first time that evil is an illusion. Up to that point, she leaves the reader in the sense that there is evil which has to be overcome and to be cast out, and that in order to cast out, you have to give ascendancy to good. But she hasn't said that evil is nothing. Isn't it terrific? You know, we used to start always with the fourth chapter. If somebody came to us about anything, we would say, you know, my dear, evil is nothing. Evil is only an illusion. We didn't say to him, now, look here, do you really want to be delivered from that situation? Is that really in the depth of your heart you desire? Do you actually want to be delivered from evil? Or do you like evil, but you don't like the effects of evil? You see how enormously human science can be, the textbook. When she comes to the fourth chapter, she bluntly spells it out. Says evil is nothing. What then is something? She says, look here, only God, Spirit, good is actually something. And that keeps evil in check. She uses that terminology. Therefore, she demands here an understanding of Spirit in order to understand the nothingness of evil. And that keeps evil in check. Isn't it beautiful? So for the first time she asks understanding, discernment of what is real and unreal. So shall we put here into the first box, in Christian Science versus Spiritualism, perhaps the epitome saying, understanding God, Spirit keeps evil in check. Yeah. So we already have these first four epitomes, and so we make a break here and then go on after the break.